Ramondre Stevenson with the fumble. He lost that one. He's now fumbled in all three games the Patriots have played. It's hour number two here. Christian Arkin, Andy Hart, WEEI Afternoons, and I'm coming to you live from the Ford Clubhouse Fenway Studio, brought to you by your New England Ford dealers and the freedom of choice. Shop deals built for you on the New England Edition F-150, the official truck of the Boston Red Sox, who are playing the Twins, if they can get it in. I saw the tarp out on the field there when I poked my head out into the bleachers there. It doesn't seem like there's a whole lot going on, and it's pretty lousy weather, but could clear up in time for the game. A game in a season that's over, but whatever. The Red Sox still playing, as are the Patriots. And I know it's funny. We got these reads where we say, you know, it's week three, but the season's not over. I'm starting to wonder that with the Patriots right now, you know? The season, it's not like we ever had big expectations for this season anyway, Andy, but if Ramondre Stevenson, who was supposed to be the leading the charge of this offense and really the one guy you could rely on, the one guy that you could hand the ball off to and feel good about, he is a fumbling machine so far, and that run game got bottled up by a pretty good Jets defense. There was the kid Clark who ripped the ball out, Chuck Clark, the strong safety. I'll tell you, that kid Sherwood's a baller. He was in there because Mosley was out. He's the backup, one of their backup middle linebackers. He was out there punishing guys. He's the one who got a big hit on Drake May. I don't know. I don't think the Patriots-Jets rivalry is anything special right now, but he's definitely a guy I was watching going, ooh, I could grow to hate you. I could grow to hate this guy because he's out there really rocking guys. But, yeah, that was to me, I think, the most distressing part of all of this. Not even so much that the defense got carved up. It's Aaron Rodgers. It's that Jets defense really bottled up the run game and made Stevenson pretty much irrelevant. And if he's not going, this team can't break 3 points.
And this fumbling thing, he's had off and on in his career. This isn't the first time he's put the ball on the ground. And, you know, job security is ball security. That's great to say. You're going to bench him, coach? You're going to take your best player and really your only consistent productive option in the offensive part of the game and bench him? Like, that's great to say. There should be that idea that, you know, your job security is tied into your production and your production is tied into holding onto the damn ball. Awesome. You're not going to bench him. You can't bench him. He's all you have. And if you bench him, it's only going to get worse because, Gibson might give you a couple plays, including a nice pass to get the over on 6.5 receiving yards if you dabbled in that, as I did. But I also dabbled in the Stevenson over 16.5 rushes, and that didn't even come close.
I dabbled on Hunter Henry over 3.5 catches, did not hit, but I did get the over on Rodgers' yard, so I made up for it there.
To get that going for you, and I, of course, I laid those points with the Jets, and I felt quite comfortable early on laying those points that this was going to be that type of a game. But no, they are so limited offensively, offensive line, talent. I don't even know where you can expect. The only expectation of the passing game evolving is Drake May, quite honestly. These people that don't want to play him and are scared, that throw to Hooper that Brissett missed, you can't miss that.
That was tough, Remember
I told you in training camp there were too many times, not that he didn't make plays, but he didn't take plays. There were plays there that he couldn't take advantage of. And if you're not going to hit that, no disrespect, you're not really an NFL quarterback. Like, I'm not sure you're a college or a high school quarterback if you're not going to hit the guy's wide open. You've got to take that opportunity because there's not going to be, especially against a good defense with a pass rush and Sauce Gardner and what they're bringing, there may not be too many of those. So you have to hit those. And then even the pass interference on the shot play to Tyquan Thornton, when the ball left his hand, I was like, that seems like a terrible throw. That doesn't feel like it really has a shot. And I'm not sure it really did. Luckily, you got the call on the pass interference, and it was pass interference, absolutely. And I know
the one
the guy
where he was holding his hand, that was a clear one.
And maybe that affected it. Maybe he gets deeper and closer to that ball. But I just, quite honestly, Brissett, when he throws more than like 7 yards, 6 yards, 8 yards, it just doesn't look good. He's not a very accurate passer. I don't feel his ability to make plays. And that's where I do think you have the opportunities, whether it's the boots that I think is way more a part of Drake May's game than Jacoby Brissett's game, the deep balls way more a part of Drake May's game than Jacoby Brissett's game. I think that it's not just people want to see the flashy rookie. He's a number three pick. I actually think he's better suited to make chicken salad out of this what he has. And I know the downside is, you're just going to have grind chicken you-know-what in the backfield.
Right.
But he has a chance. And you just said it. You've kind of given up or are close to giving up on the season and the idea like you're going to win games. It's not about winning games. It's about Drake May getting experience and developing and, you know, building a rapport with Thornton or Baker or whoever the hell else it is. These games count, but they matter even more than the count. Because we talked about this game. We expected a loss, right? Like, it wasn't about losing the game. It's about how you lost the game. And when you have your quarterback say, we got to get our energy back. What's that now? You didn't bring any energy? Why not?
They didn't look like they had energy, and I put that on Jerod Mayo. They were not ready to go. They were not ready to play that game, it didn't seem like.
Jerod Mayo's culture test that I said he was at, that crossroads,
brutal.
Failed. You failed miserably. And I think he knows it. What did he say last night? Something like, based on the score, I have to do more or something. And no, Jerod, because the score, misleading. Kind of looks like it wasn't horrifically bad. It was more horrifically bad than the score. Based on watching 60 minutes of really bad football from your team on both sides of the ball is the concern. And again, the blocking, is that going to get better? We've been talking about fundamentals. Is the tackling going to return to week one? Or is it more likely that they lack energy and that they're flat and that the negativity snowballs and they maybe don't really want to tackle as much? Tackling is desire on some level, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like defense in basketball. Some of it is just want to. And
some guys like to just go out and hit. I mean, you know, there's
sure.
guys, the Peppers guys like that. You know, they want to go out and hit no matter what. But you're right. When it comes to, you know, business decisions is what they like, what the kids call them these days.
Yep.
You could see some of that, I'd say, in a team that's 2-10 or whatever and as we get towards Christmas.
Yeah, and they're on their way towards 2-10. They're much more on their way to 2-10 than the 3-0 that some people were projecting and dreaming about not too long ago.
Agreed. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. A lot of you waiting to talk about this game, so let's go to Stephen Fall River, who wants to talk about what's next for the Patriots. Go ahead, Steve.
Although I have a few musings, Ramondre Stevenson would get 0 to 5 touches on the New York Jets. If there was a standout to bring Bill Belichick back at Gillette Stadium, it'd be Tony from Bridgewater and Danny from Quincy, and maybe they'd bring one other guy with them. That's how many people would be waiting to bring back Bill Belichick. In the meantime, I think Tony from Bridgewater listens to your show every day, guys. Don't you think he does? Because he calls in a lot.
I hope so.
He calls in a good amount. So do you, though, Steve. You listen a lot.
Okay, well, did he hear me yesterday?
I don't know.
Did he hear me yesterday when
it's
I called
question
him?
Question for Tony. How can I know that, Steve?
I'm sure he did. He should remember. He should have been thinking about that. Now who's bringing Belichick back? Boy, that Steve from Fall River told me exactly what was going to happen tonight. It unfolded exactly the way he told me.
That's true, but Steve, Andy Hart told you exactly how it was going to unfold, too, and I think people maybe were more likely to have heard that. You
Anyone
were right.
With eyeballs could tell
Steve
you.
Steve was right, and I didn't commit to a blowout win. I thought the Jets would win. I was sort of wishy-washy on whether the Patriots could cover the 6.5, honestly. I didn't end up betting it, but I didn't have a hard take on it like Andy did, and Andy, you were 100% right. That was ass-kicking, and that's what you expected to happen.
I expected an ass-kicking, but it was more of an ass-kicking than I expected. I thought they would put a little early fight up. I didn't think they had fight from the first second of the game. I didn't think
right,
there
you was... said it'd be like 31-13. That would involve more than one scoring drive.
Yeah.
And the one scoring drive that had two penalties in it. There was the unnecessary roughness on my guy Sherwood there and the pass interference on Thornton we were just talking about.
Yep.
Those both happened on the one drive where they got into field goal range. So, I mean, you know, that speaks to just how futile it all was.
For a long portion of this game, the Jets had more penalty yards than the Patriots had offensive yards. So the Jets weren't even playing clean, good, perfect football. That's what kept you from truly getting embarrassed on the scoreboard, because the Jets could have played better, and that's kind of sad to say. But no, I learned more about this team than I wanted to learn, I feel like, and none of it was good. None of it was good. I don't think they handled success in week one all that well. I told you that when they won that game, that might have been the worst thing that happened to them, is to think, yeah, everybody says we suck, but from what I saw, our defense looked good, our offensive line allowed us to run the ball.
We're actually awesome.
Yeah, I think it was whistling past the graveyard, and I think the head coach sort of led that march. And now he's realized, yeah, your line stinks, just like we've been telling you, your line stinks. And now the new spin, have you noticed? The new spin is, but we can fix it internally.
Right. Yeah.
I don't believe you.
I heard them both say that. I heard Wolf say that. I heard Van, I think Van Pelt said that.
Yeah.
That is a company line that I would not lean on. I'm sorry. I know right after the game, you got to say something, but that's one they should all huddle up in a meeting down there somewhere, one of those conference rooms over at Gillette, and be like, guys, this internal thing, that's not going to work. First of all, we can't. We don't have any internal people to do this. And second of all, we should be looking outside of the organization right now.
Well,
we should be trying
to
swing a trade. We should try and do anything. Like, this isn't going to work. We're not going to be able to get anything out of any quarterback this way.
So about a month ago, they were telling us, you know, we haven't figured out the guys yet. We're not even sure the guys are here. Our starters might not even be here.
Right.
And now they're telling us they're sure all the answers are internal. Why? Because you picked up a couple guys off the waiver wire, Zach Thomas and whatever the hell the other guy's name
is. Montre the Giant.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are the internal answers. And it's not just a shot or even a shot at Scott Peters, the O-line coach. I'm not necessarily saying he's incapable of coaching people up. I think they have very limited talent to work with on the offensive line, and even the talent they have is either young and inexperienced and, you know, banged up. There's just a lot of layers for me to question that, and that's where it ties into my May thing. I want to play May. I think you got to put him out there. I would also ask this. Forget the fumbles, but isn't Ramondre Stevenson a core member of this team for the future?
Yes.
Okay. Well, they just signed him to a contract.
They signed him, so he should be. I mean, he can get out of these contracts, but yeah, I would consider him that.
And they gave him decent money, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So why is it okay to put Ramondre Stevenson behind a putrid offensive line that's going to get him hit in the backfield more often than not, but you can't put Drake May out there because he's a little heavier? They're not that much difference in weight.
Well, it's the difference between a running back and a quarterback and what they do. I mean,
So he's not valuable for the future. It's fine if he gets hurt.
Well, they're much more likely to take hits than a quarterback. I don't like that question. I don't think that question really makes sense. It doesn't.
Like, I don't like that question.
I don't. Well, you're talking about a running back like the same as a quarterback. Running backs generally make contact on every single play. Like that's a little bit different.
It's not generally in the backfield.
Quarterback
it's not
behind
generally
that
before
line.
They can pick up any yards. It's not generally
that's true.
Before they can find a hole and get moving.
They also break tackles more than quarterbacks do. I mean, that's part
of the
game. No, I
know. I'm not saying it's the same, but we keep doing this thing where we put value on people. Jacoby Brissett, not valuable. Drake May, valuable. Joe Milton, right. Not valuable. Ramondre Stevenson, apparently not that valuable because we can put him out there. Football players play football. They get paid handsomely to play football. This is what they're supposed to be doing. They're professionals. And this idea that you can't possibly play Drake May, I continue to push back against. You know my theory.
I agree with you there.
Oh, also, by the way, for our little argument, there was a good Tom Brady clip making the rounds, I think, with Stephen A., talking about how it's doing all these young quarterbacks a disservice to put them out there so early and they don't really have all the... He seems like a guy who would advocate for a redshirt year for quarterbacks. I'm just saying.
Yeah, no, that's true. He did come out and say that. I thought he sounded like a cranky old codger personally, but he did come out and say all
those things.
Like
that question.
I mean, I don't...
You sound like a politician at one of these debates. I don't like that question. I'm not going to answer that question. I don't care.
No, I answered it. I just said, telling you I don't like it. I don't think you should. The premise of the running back being the same as the quarterback.
I didn't say the same.
Well, okay, but you're talking about putting them behind the line like they do the same thing a quarterback does. That's not true.
Is the line really good at run blocking?
I'd say it's much better at that than pass blocking, yes.
I don't think it really is.
Through three games, they have been. I mean, I don't know if they will be all year.
No, they haven't.
Yes, they have. They've been better at run blocking.
The running back has been good, just like the quarterback's been good to run for his life.
Run blocking against Seattle, I thought, wasn't bad. I thought they did a much better job in that game. They did a bad job last night, you're right, and I think that the first game was overrated, but in the second game, I thought they ran block pretty well.
I thought it was mediocre. I think he's had to make plays. They've had to make plays. They've gotten a lot of yards after contact, which is not a good sign for a team. It's not a good sign for an offensive line. I don't think the offensive line is very good in the run game or the pass game, and therefore, I don't think it's fair that we value Drake May and his body and his life more than we value Ramondre Stevenson. I just want equality for all.
Okay, that's very, very big of you there, Andy Hart. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. Brian Frazoco going to tell you what's trending. When we come back, we're going to take a look at this offensive line. It's the worst offensive line since, I don't know, you tell me. We'll get to that and your phone calls right after trending. Kept him down a little bit there in the fourth quarter. Jacoby Brissett getting absolutely mollywopped out there last night at MetLife. A beatdown in the Meadowlands for the Patriots, and I'm sure for Jets fans, that probably felt pretty good last night. You know, the last time you beat the Patriots, it was last year, it was the last time you played them. It was that game in the snow at Gillette Stadium. It was Belichick's last game. It was a game that would have been better for you to lose, New York Jets. And instead, you won on that Breece Hall touchdown, which ruined my bet, and I'm still mad about. And that was it. Before that, it had been 15 games since you had beaten the Patriots prior, spanning almost a decade. And I'm sure that that one felt good. I'm sure that Jets fans were feeling, they probably watched every second of that. But Patriots fans, I bet, turned it off. Jets fans, I'm sure, reveled in that. And they should. I mean, that was the type of game that you enjoy. If you're playing a team that you hate, you're getting after their quarterback, you're scoring points on them, moving the ball up and down the field, and they have to feel good about the Aaron Rodgers era. But let's dive into this offensive line, Andy, because we've put it off for about an hour and a half here. This is the worst offensive line I've seen and that I remember in my lifetime as a Patriots fan. And I'm, you know, remember some of the Marshall Newhouse and, you know, Jermaine Illuminor, who's actually the commodity in the league now. But there have been some bad eras of offensive line. Never this discombobulated, though. I don't think I can ever remember a time where it seemed this dire almost all across the thing. Even David Andrews last night was getting bullied on the inside. What's an offensive line that you can sort of remember, or any group that you remember is even kind of like this?
Group, none. And it is definitely faded post Dante Scarnecchia and later in the Belichick tenure. The offensive line's been an issue for years. We've been talking about it, whether it's right tackle, the Connor McDermott year where he was the saving grace in November and December, whatever he was. And some of that, I do fully believe, was Dante Scarnecchia's ability to develop offensive linemen, to take a practice squatter here or, you know, a journeyman guy there and make them good enough. I also think this is as questionable talent as they've had for a while. And you combine the talent with the coaching and the system. I don't know if this system is up to par. I got a couple, you know, you got the Alex Van Pelt part of the system, and then you got this, strike zone principles or strike principles that Scott Peters preaches that I don't really know what it means. I don't know. I thought offensive linemen all used their hands and all punched and all hit. And
no, definitely not.
I don't know what this is different than that. So, no, this is in totality the worst I can remember, because even your mainstays aren't playing well. You're not getting Mike Onwenu play out of Mike Onwenu. I've even heard theories on social media, people asking, should we maybe just move Onwenu to guard and hope that we can have a center and a right guard that are good and at least have, you know, like a 6-yard wide patch of grass where we feel like there's a safety zone there, and then the rest kind of fill in, figure out on the fly. Maybe that means Caden Wallace goes to right tackle because that's his natural position.
Right.
And is that a way to start to, you know, I questioned it earlier because I don't think it's going to happen, this idea that the offensive line is going to be markedly better as the season goes on. But is that a theoretical way to go down that road? And then that means if you get Vedarian Lowe healthy and you get City So healthy, maybe that's the best. Remember the five guys and figuring out the five guys working together?
Yeah.
They were all talking
about
it.
We got five guys. I don't know where they're going to go. We got five guys, and we'll put them somewhere, and that'll be our best five, and that'll be the offensive line, which was a terrible plan at the time and seems even worse now.
Still is. The execution of it has been worse than the theoretical part of it back in the summer. But no, your bigger picture question, this is the worst offensive line I can remember seeing. Now, I think there's probably other teams that would sit, like the Giants have had some pretty bad offensive lines in the last handful of years. There's probably some Giants fans listening in our audience area that can, you know, come up with names and different seasons where it's been really bad.
What about that 2002 Houston Texans team that got David Carr sacked, what, like 70-something times?
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. There was record
numbers.
There's
been numbers. Some bad ones.
Yep, absolutely. I didn't watch a lot of 2002 Texans games, so I can't give you anecdotal evidence, but certainly
you call yourself a foot. No wonder NFL Films wanted nothing to do with you, Andy Hart.
That's,
you know, if you
point.
Just blow off the other teams in different eras like that and thumb your nose at them, that's what's bound to happen.
It's a fair point you bring up. I probably should go back and study why Carr was broken, and that would be the example too. They're tying those two together
of the Carr worst possible thing. Yes, yes.
Carr is the example of a guy that got punch drunk or sack drunk or whatever, and it may have really derailed any chance he had of developing into an NFL quarterback. This is about as bad as we've seen. And it makes me wonder how it plays out. Like, do they start? Are they doing what we're doing? Are they saying, well, you know, because they are apparently very collaborative. So a bunch of guys sit down, have ideas. We're in the O-line meeting room, and Gerard's in, and we're talking, and AVP, and Ben McAdoo, and everybody's here. Hey, what are your thoughts on putting on Wenu back at guard, maybe? Like, do you think they're having these types of all ideas, all hands on deck conversations right now?
Probably. I think that that's been, if I had to guess, I'm not there, but if I had to guess, I'd say that's probably how this has looked all along. I don't think they're going to stray away from it. I don't think anybody feels strongly enough as a leader to make these decisions unilaterally. And, you know, you look at, there's another team that had a bad offensive line last year, the Jets. The Jets last year had a very bad offensive line. Dwayne Brown and Mekhi Becton were their two tackles, and they had Laken Tomlinson, who I don't know where he is now, but that was like three-fifths of their line. All of those guys are gone now, and they've replaced them with better players. They traded for a right tackle, they signed a left tackle, and they traded for a left guard, and they brought them all in, and that's what they did. And it's like, if the Jets can do it, I don't want to hear about how Elliot Wolf and everybody was just so hamstrung. It was all running backs and guards. There was nobody out there. The Jets figured it out, and they had an offensive line last year that literally got their quarterback knocked out for the season. And that was a big decision that they made. They wanted to fix that up. They may have had a little bit better of a time because, you know, free agents maybe are more likely to want to play with Aaron Rodgers than Drake May, Jacoby Brissett. Fine. So maybe you don't get Tyron Smith. You could have made trades. You could have done other things. The Jets figured it out, and you couldn't. 617-779-7937. Let's go to Cam in Wilmington, who has a thought on Elliot Wolf. Go ahead, Cam.
Hey, guys. It's a pleasure to call into the best afternoon show in Boston. Just wanted to jump in and talk a little bit about how Elliot Wolf, you just made the point, too, where he had no excuse in the offseason. I agree. Offseason draft, no excuse. But it kind of worries me now because I'm looking at, like, free agents, who could be trade candidates, who's on practice squads. Like, there's nothing out there. And I'm one of those people that have been like, let's just play Drake May, get it out there. I'm getting more nervous now because I'm looking at it and I'm like, Elliot Wolf's hands are tied. There's really no one out there that's going to fix this problem. It's a draft problem, and I think we're going to be another 3-4 win team this year, regardless of if May starts or not. I'll hang up and listen. Thanks, guys.
All right, thanks for the call, Cam. I'm kind of with you. I think that, I don't know if you feel this way, Andy. I feel like this loss and the way the season appears to be going right now is, to me anyway, changing the trajectory of what this rebuild's going to be and how long it's going to take. I'm thinking this is a maybe 2 or 3 draft rebuild before you start seeing some real turnaround. And by then, I mean, listen, you know, we talked about burning a year of your rookie quarterback's rookie deal. If we're burning 2-3 years of that with this crappy team and this crappy offense, that's, you know, like, that's a, then you're going to have a big decision to make with him. Well, is he any good? Do we go fifth year with him? Do we extend them? What do we do with Drake May? I don't know. He's not been in an offense that was worth a damn. So it's going to be a tough to sit. I feel like these are the cycles that bad teams get into, you know, with their quarterbacks. And, you know, you saw it with the Jets. You saw it with all the teams in the AFC East. For about 20 years, they just kept rotating through these high draft pick quarterbacks. And it didn't work out for any of them. Now, I'd hate to think that the Patriots are going down that road, but it kind of seems like it right now.
There is absolutely a chance you are going down that road. And that is, it's inarguable in my opinion. Now, it doesn't derail me from my confidence in the opportunity that is at hand for Elliot Wolf. Optimistic Andy says, this offseason you can turn things around really quickly. It was not realistic last year. I yelled at your former co-host, Adam Jones, about that a lot. He liked to bring up the Texans, and you can do it in a year, and you can be in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Not what they were doing. Not the systematic tear down and rebuild with new quarterback, new offensive coordinator, new head coach, new defensive coordinator, new GM. The whole damn thing was not realistic. And you weren't gonna get a franchise quarterback, a franchise left tackle, and a franchise wide receiver in one offseason. That wasn't realistic either, but I still think you play Drake May at some point and you begin the process of him developing as a professional. And I think you're going to, I mean, the memes were everywhere yesterday. Everybody's paying attention to Will Campbell, the tackle out of LSU, right, and how much he can squat. And there was all that. And you still have the $135 million at your disposal. Now, to me, the biggest question is, are you starting to doubt Elliot Wolf? Are you fully confident in Elliot Wolf that you want him drafting in the top five again, or deciding to trade and getting value for the pick and spending $130 million? And I think it's fair, based on the limited sample size we have of what he's done, to question, because I love Drake May. Okay, you nailed the pick. Robert Kraft went on Amazon last night and said there were three really good quarterbacks. Thankfully, the one we wanted fell to us or something.
Yes.
I liked the way he said that. I don't know if it's true or not, but as a Patriots fan and observer, I think you want to believe you actually got the one they wanted, the one of the three they truly wanted. So
Taylor Rooks gets guys to say anything. You know, remember Jaylen Brown? He sat down with her. He's like, yeah, we're going to win 10 championships. He's like, Robert Kraft last night, like, yeah, I knew Mayo was going to be the coach 5 years ago. I knew all this. Yeah, we're great. Like, she, I don't know what it is. Actually, I do know what it is.
I know what it is. We're all men. We're all simple. We're all men. We're all simple.
She gets these fellas talking. She gets some. She gets some boasting.
And it's not liquor. It's not drugs. It's not any of those things. It's a very simple, animalistic, age-old thing. So we'll move past that. But Elliot Wolf, I think it's very effective. Yeah. I think it's very fair after that to question. Well, you couldn't pull off the deal to get Keon Coleman. You didn't trade up to get Guyton, the last tackle. You weren't aggressive. You kind of settled for Jalen Polk. I don't know how good Jalen Polk is. You drafted a right tackle instead of a left tackle in Caden Wallace. You signed a right tackle instead of a left tackle. Told us he could play left tackle. There are enough questionable maneuverings this offseason where I think it's fair to question your confidence in. I feel like we've said this two or three times in the last, like, 5 years. This could really be the most critical offseason in Patriot history with a top five pick and $150 million to spend. And do you trust Elliot Wolf to oversee that whole operation?
No, I don't. And I think that this past offseason was a really important one, and I don't think that importance was conveyed very well. I don't. I think that they sort of looked at it and said, well, we'll get the quarterback, and as far as the rest of the offense goes, we'll figure it out. You know, we'll make it work. That's not the way you do that with a rookie quarterback.
But it will work. If the quarterback is right, it will work. Because I pushed back. There were a lot of other people, maybe like you. I don't know if you people qualify here, but you people that said, get the receiver and you'll figure out the quarterback, or get the tackle and you'll figure out the quarterback.
I wanted to build an offense and then bring in the quarterback. Yes, I thought that would have made more sense.
But bring in the quarterback from where?
The draft next year, sign a veteran, do as many number of things you could do. Trade up. I mean, come on. There's ways to get quarterbacks.
No, there's ways to get quarterbacks. Are there ways to get quarterbacks that you love as much as they at least pretend to love Drake May?
And if that's really true, and they were so gaga over Drake May that there was never any question whatsoever about who they were going to pick with that take with that pick, then fine. But I remember reporting says stating otherwise, that they had other guys in mind, and they were looking at some of these other players, and they weren't in love with any of them to trade up. But, you know, like, this is sort of what the whole philosophy was about, and people had different ideas about this, but mine was sort of, if you're going to drop a quarterback into this situation, there's a very low chance of them succeeding. And I think that right now that's looking pretty good. I mean, that's sort of looking like the way things are here. You're not going to put Drake May there and all of a sudden have him go out there and tear it up against any real defense with this team, this line, and these wide receivers. There's no way. And, you know, if you had built it up a little bit and drafted another quarterback somewhere down the road, I wouldn't think he'd be good, but that may have been more effective than just trying to make it all work right now with the quarterback.
Who said he has to tear it up? The tear it up is different than breaks. I feel like that's the common expression. Oh, you're gonna break him, you're gonna ruin him, he's never gonna have a chance. And that's, if I don't know whether I believe in it or not, because aside from a hammer, it's not easy to break a diamond. I learned that on this show on the text line.
Right.
Appreciate you. Love you guys. But theoretically, you can't. It's hard to break a diamond. And if you think he is a diamond, I'm not saying I expect him to go out there and carry the offense, make plays down the field. Suddenly, oh my God, you win six in a row down the stretch, and the momentum you're going to carry into the offseason or next year. But if he's a good quarterback, more than good, if he's a great quarterback for modern standards, if he's the next top 10 quarterback, top 8 quarterback in the league, he'll be fine. He'll deal with the pressure. He'll deal with some hits. He'll deal with some interceptions. And then next offseason, you very much have the ability to protect him better and give him talent to work with. And that's when the process can take off. So that's the one
thing. Well, that seems like the best case scenario right now, what you just laid out. That's the best case scenario. And I think that a lot of stuff's going to have to go right for it to unfold that way. I think right now it's sort of leaning in the other direction.
Sure, but I think any of
you don't have anything, Andy. This isn't just like a pass catching problem. You don't have anything. I mean, really, like, you can turn around and hand the ball off, and there's, you got a running back there.
Who
That's
fumbles.
Basically it. This is nothing. Come on.
But a lot of things have to happen for any of these turnarounds, don't you think? Like, Houston has been doing it for years. They went and got Laremy Tunsil. That worked. They may have overpaid, whatever. They got him. But even last year, they needed C.J. Stroud to fall to them, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they didn't have, they, if you believe Schefter, they would have traded up.
They
and
wanted
tried
Bryce
to get
Young.
Bryce
yep.
Young. So yep. they needed luck. And then they needed to get Will Anderson to fall into place, right? They had to trade back up. Didn't they pick 2 and 3? Didn't they trade
yes,
up to
they
number
did.
Three? Yeah, so like,
2 and 3.
If that trade doesn't happen.
And it worked. It worked.
No, I know. Yeah. But, like, that could easily have not have happened, right? Like, there trades like that can go sideways in a hurry. Somebody else offers more. Somebody else trades into
sure.
three. The team
Absolutely.
At three says, no, hell, I want that player. So any of these turnaround stories, a lot of things have to go right for it to work. And that's where it's hard. And that's where you just said. Now, in sort of the old Tiger versus the field mentality, mm-hmm. do you think it's more likely that the Patriots turn this around and get good or are in a cycle of firings and redraftings for the next 5 years?
In the Drake May era of this team?
Yeah.
I would say probably the second thing you said there. Not that
Me
this
too.
Suddenly becomes good. I think this is probably going to be, at least for now, a multi-year rebuild that's going to come into a awkward timing now with the contract for Drake May, and they're going to have to move on and start over and do it all again. And maybe the second time they'll get it right. And who knows if it's even going to be the same people making the decisions. It probably
right.
won't be. I mean, let's,
no.
let's be honest here. So I don't know. I mean, I don't think it's suddenly going to take off. I think the AFC is too good and you're too bad.
Right, and just look at the pure numbers and the examples around the league. More often than not, even if you hit on something, you miss on the something else, and it takes a while to get sort of the perfect pairings of coaches and GMs and quarterbacks. Like, the Chargers would be an example, right? They hit on the quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't hit on the coach. They didn't hit on the GM. They've had to turn
right.
that over. Now they hope that is the next step in Harbaugh landing there. Like, one example that feels like it hit was Cincinnati, right? You
yes.
paired up Joe Burrow. You brought in Zach Taylor, although I'm not a real big Zach Taylor fan. I'm not sure I can call that a hit, but they did go
he's,
to a Super Bowl.
He's not having a great fall so far, I would say.
Right.
You know, I mean, I don't think Cincinnati's super happy with him and the way they've started off either.
And look at San Francisco. You hit on the GM and the coach. You haven't really hit on the quarterback until now. Like, you've
right.
been searching for the quarterback. You had
they
a few
whiffed
different...
hard on the quarterback, yeah.
Right. You're trying to find that. So it's more likely than not, to use the old Deflategate Wells Report term, mm-hmm. that Elliott Wolf, Gerard Mayo, and Drake May are not the future of the New England Patriots. One of them might be. Two of them might be. But it's really unlikely that you nailed the hell out of the first offseason and you have your GM, your head coach, and your quarterback, because there's just not a lot of examples of that working, and there's a lot more counterexamples of, even if you hit one of them, you didn't hit all of them.
Yeah, you're right about that. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. We are live here from our Ford Clubhouse Fenway studio. We'll get to your phone calls. And what happened to the defense? That was supposed to be the strength of this team. They get carved up for the second straight week. Geno Smith and Aaron Rodgers back-to-back having their way with this Gerard Mayo, DeMarcus Covington defense. We'll get into that next. Aaron Rodgers' final line, 27 of 35, 281 yards, 2 touchdowns, no picks. He got sacked twice, a passer rating of 118.9. Jacoby Brissett's numbers not quite as good. It's a little less than that. He got sacked 5 times for one. 12 of 18, 98 yards, no touchdowns, no picks. Drake May, who came on in relief late in the fourth, 4 for 8, 22 yards, 2 sacks. His QB rating was, his passer rating was 56.2. If you add up the two Patriots quarterbacks' ratings, it does eclipse Aaron Rodgers. But that's the only way you can possibly do it. Rodgers was. It's not how that works. That's true. But I was trying to make a point. Rodgers, listen, I mean, you talk about the defense being a strength of this team. So far, it seems like two of the better quarterbacked games in the league through 3 weeks have taken place against the Patriots.
Yes, this defense is not living up to the hopes and expectations of people like Mina Kimes and others who want it to be a top five unit, want it to be a unit that can basically borderline win games on its own or come really close. They did not even come close to competing at a high level yesterday, never mind giving the team a chance to win just based on their performances. And something has come across my plate, Mr. Arcand, host
oh.
one. And you're going to learn that I have a bit of an issue where sometimes I don't hate people or things. I hate the way they are portrayed. For example, I never hated Tim Tebow, but the way his people tried to make him out to be the second coming of, well, the second coming in a lot of ways.
Of the Lord Jesus Christ, yes. That was how he was presented to us, yes.
I hated that, and I pushed back more against the people than him, because he seemed like a nice, likable man.
You said, you're not good. Jesus Christ, Tim Tebow. Come on.
That was my original sniff test. I was like, I don't think you're Jesus. I'm going to call BS on this. And that's happened in variety of Tony Romo, when people told me he's the greatest color commentator of all time. He's not as bad as I make him out to be at times, because I sometimes push back against his fans. Well, anyway.
But it was a lot at first. I mean, people really went overboard.
Over the top gushing. And that's what we have gotten lately for number zero in your roster, number one in your heart, Christian Gonzalez, who is a good corner. But I've been told he's dominant, maybe the best corner in football. Oh, my God, he has shut down Ja'Marr Chase, and he has shut down everybody he's gone against for six games in the NFL. Did you know? And I haven't heard this anywhere, and it's conveniently left out a lot of the Christian Gonzalez analysis.
I don't know what you're about to say, so I don't know this. Go ahead.
Okay. After 2 weeks, your friends, not mine, your friends over at Pro Football Focus had him graded as the 75th best corner in football.
75th, you say?
Yeah, 75th. You know, each team has two to three. Right. So that's 32, 64, 90. Oh, boy. He's at the bottom end of the third corner. And
I don't know. Has there been a lot of great corner plays so far? Because I feel like he's been better than that. But I don't know. I mean, I don't know how they're calculating it.
I'm just telling you. Has anyone, and I know all these people that are putting up,
oh, he had 17 plays against Garrett Wilson, and it led to four targets and three completions and one touchdown.
I know those people that are putting up these stats, pretty sure they're aware of Pro Football Focus. They don't ignore it like I do. They're choosing to ignore information that is quite counter to the narrative and the propaganda campaign that they've been putting forth about Christian Gonzalez. For some reason,
just as you're choosing to use PFF when it fits your narrative,
suits my
argument. It's a similar thing, so I understand, but yes, go on.
Because I'm right.
right.
But why is it not good enough to just say Christian Gonzalez is a good young corner? Why do we have to fluff it beyond that and say he's a top five corner, he's one of the best corners in football, he's shutting down he didn't shut down Garrett Wilson. Garrett Wilson was open every time Aaron Rodgers wanted him to be. And there were some circumstantial. There was the one on the sideline. He missed him on the deep throw.
Yeah,
that would have come back.
They went to him and didn't get a bunch of completions. I mean, there was, I think, four or five either knockaways or drops or whatever, yeah.
Well, drops. I'm not sure there were any knockaways. I must have missed those. And I'm not saying he got torched. The touchdown, he was within, inches of knocking that ball down? But that's cornerback in the NFL. You can be within inches, you give up a touchdown, and people tell you had a bad day. And I just had a bad day. I faded to black. I thought I was dead based on the Twitch chat. Holy Moses, that's scary. It was like the end of Sopranos. It was just fade to black for me.
That was tough.
But
there wasn't didn't Jonathan Jones knock one away, or am I crazy?
Yeah.
I'm thinking of something
Oh, yeah. No, I'm talking about
it was the Mike Christian Williams at the end of the game.
It was on Mike Williams.
Right. Jonathan Jones knocked it away. Not Gonzalez on Garrett Wilson. He continues to not tackle very well. His tackling is subpar through the first 3 weeks. But my bigger point is, all I've seen is all the stats of who he's shadowing and how he's shutting them down. And all these analytics people that are showing me this, the people that like to keep stats at practice and tell me completions at practice in 7-on-7 and not even that, they failed to let me know that he was the 75th best corner in football, and I believe updated as of right now, he's in the hundreds based on last night's performance.
Really?
In
his grade. So he was 75th going into last night.
Oh, yeah. That was after week two. Now we're into week three, and he's played week three. So I actually think he's significantly better than that. That's where I would tell Pro Football Focus they're stupid.
I think that's a harsh, harsh judgment.
Stupid.
I'd be interested in seeing who's ahead of him. I mean, I think he's still pretty good.
Everybody, apparently.
Yeah, the whole league and all the backups and the practice squad. Everybody's better than him.
But and I think he's much better than that. I think he's a really good young corner, but he's not the future Hall of Famer right now that they are all promoting him to be, that he is Darrelle Revis in his prime, checking off receiver after receiver. And I hate the slanted coverage. I hate because they know that. They know what the PFF, and normally they would put the PFF grade. You think if the PFF grade had him as the fifth best corner in football, they would have noted it?
Yes, I think so.
I do. So they
I
are
think I had 100% chance they would have.
So this is like politics, where they're selling a narrative. They're not actually telling the truth. They're selling a narrative, and they're leaving out information that doesn't back up the point that they want to make, or the sale they're trying to. I hate it.
Yeah, it's can like selective polling. You know, like, oh, yeah, this poll over here says you're winning. Well, this one says he's winning. This one says they're winning. It's I know what you mean. They're manipulating it, and that's true. But you asked why do that? Why fluff them up when you don't need to? I'll tell you why. Because there's nobody else in this team that's even Pro Bowl caliber, I don't think. You know, like, I mean, we're not talking. Maybe White eventually. I don't know if that's this year.
Wait,
maybe
it's the Keon media's
White
job?
Eventually.
It's the media's
job. No, it's not the media's
job.
I'm not talking about the media. I'm talking about in general. There's a lot of excitement for Christian Gonzalez from fans, and I think also from the media to a lesser extent, because there's not much else really to cover or to get excited about on this team. And he represents something there in the form of, I don't know, great Patriots corners from years past. You know, you think about the Ty Laws and Revis and Malcolm Butler corners. It's like, well, maybe he'll be that someday. But he's definitely not that yet. Yeah, I agree with you. I think it did get overblown, but the reason why that's happening, that's it right there. I guarantee you. 617. Sorry, go ahead.
I would prefer objectivity. And I think no one wanted Christian Gonzalez more than I did. I wanted them to trade up to get him. I thought they were going to have to trade up to get him. They ended up trading down to get him. And I was as excited as anybody. I think he's long and athletic and fast and can do it all and has all the potential in the world. But he's not there yet. So it's okay to be a fan of his and say he's not there yet. It's like Drake May. Right. I love Drake May. I wanted the pick. And then the first week of training camp, I was like, Drake May doesn't look great out here. Like, should I just ignore what I'm seeing? Should I just fluff it up and pretend that he's going to be great? And I'm nothing to see here. Move along. Like, we have eyeballs. Just say what your eyeballs see. Don't try to make it something that it isn't. I hate it.
I had a bit of an issue with Christian Gonzalez coming out of Oregon, and it's that he came out of Oregon, that he spurned my Buffaloes and transferred to Oregon to go play with those stupid Ducks. That pissed me off. I didn't like him because of that. But now I like him again. Athletes named Christian. Most of the time, I like them all. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. Quick break. When we come back, there has been a chorus of fans who want Drake May to start next week, not this coming weekend, obviously, because they don't play, but next week against the San Francisco 49ers. We'll ask you that same question at 617-779-7937, and we'll get to that question next.